The men of the Sonderkommando were sitting on the concrete floor of the furnace room, wherever they could find room, waiting anxiously but silently for the next move. Suddenly, the silence was broken. One of the commando crew, a thin, sickly, black-haired man about 30 years old, whose eyes were magnified by a pair of thick glasses, jumped to his feet and began to speak in a voice loud enough for everyone to hear. It was the Dayan, the rabbi of a small church community in Poland, a self-taught man whose knowledge was vast both in the spiritual and temporal realms. He was the ascetic member of the Sonderkommando. In conformance with the tenets of his religion, he ate sparingly, accepting only bread, margarine, and onions from the well-stocked commando larder. He had been assigned to the cremation commando, but because of his religious fanaticism, I had talked the Ober into excusing him from this frightful work. The argument I had used with the Ober had simply been that this man could not be of much use for the heavy work involved in cremation, since he was weak from his self-imposed ascetic diet. Besides, I had argued, he only slows up the work by pausing over each body to murmur prayers for its salvation. And there are often several thousand souls a day to pray for. These had been my arguments, but they had sufficed, strangely enough, and the Ober had assigned him to burn the pile of refuse which was forever accumulating in the courtyard of number 2. This refuse, called Canada by the SS, was composed of objects that had once belonged to the deportees, objects of such little material value that they were considered not worth being salvaged, various foodstuffs, documents, diplomas, military decorations, passports, marriage certificates, prayer books, holy objects and Bibles that the deportees had brought with them into captivity. This little hill called Canada daily consumed hundreds of thousands of photographs, pictures of young married couples, elderly groups, charming children, and pretty girls, together with innumerable prayer books, in many of which I found carefully inked notations recording the dates of important events, births, marriages, deaths, in the lives of the various families. Sometimes there were flowers culled from the graves of beloved parents in all the Jewish cemeteries of Europe, pressed between the pages and piously preserved. Prayer beads and odds and ends of all sorts rounded out the smoldering hill. This was where the Dayan worked, or rather, where he did not work. For all he did was watch the fires burn. Even so, he was dissatisfied, for his religious beliefs forbade him from participating in the burning of prayer books or holy objects. I felt sorry for him, but could do nothing further to help him. It was impossible to obtain an easier job, for we were, after all, only members of the commando of the living dead. This, then, was the man who began to speak. Fellow Jews, an inscrutable will has sent our people to its death. Fate has allotted us the cruelest of tasks, that of participating in our own destruction, of witnessing our own disappearance down to the very ashes to which we are reduced. In no instance have the heavens opened to send showers and put out the funeral pyre flames. We must accept, resignedly, as sons of Israel should, that this is the way things must be. God has so ordained it. Why? It is not for us, miserable humans, to seek the answer. This is the fate that has befallen us. Do not be afraid of death. What is life worth, even if by some strange miracle we should manage to remain alive? We would return to our cities and towns to find cold and pillaged homes. In every room, in every corner, the memory of those who have disappeared would lurk, haunting our tear-filled eyes. Stripped of family and relatives, we would wander like restless, shuffling shadows of our former selves, of our completed pasts, finding nowhere any peace or rest. Flames burned in his eyes. His thin face was transfigured. Perhaps as he spoke, he was already in touch with the beyond. Dead silence filled the room, interrupted only by the occasional scratching of a match as someone lighted a cigarette. Now and then a heavy sigh expressed a last farewell bid by one of us to the living and to the dead. The heavy doors swung open. Oberscharführer Steinberg entered the room, accompanied by two guards, machine guns in hand.